I'm Dorothy Wickenden, and on today's Politics and More podcast, the editor of NewYorker.com, Nicholas Thompson, talks to New Yorker staff writer Nicholas Paumgarten about drones and the new FAA regulations that are being passed to make them more consumer-friendly.
The Consumer Technology Association, an industry group, estimates that 400,000 drones will be sold this holiday season. And there's a reason for that. They're cool. They're exciting. The technology is evolving in remarkable ways. But the fact also might keep you up at night if you're in charge of transportation safety.
We fully appreciate the potential of unmanned aircraft to transform transportation, commerce, and quality of life.
That's Transportation Secretary Anthony Fox at a press conference in October.
But we've also seen unmanned aircraft interfere, not help, with our lives. This year, pilots have reported seeing unmanned aircraft twice as frequently as they did in 2014. And the number of unmanned aircraft in our airspace continues to grow at astounding rates.
Drone hobby groups, like the Academy of Model Aeronautics, are trying to do their part. They put out a video backed by the FAA called Know Before You Fly, which features the comedian Jeff Dunham doing a ventriloquist bit with a puppet.
And you shouldn't fly over vehicles. Oh, why not? What if you crash into the vehicle? Oh, well, make sure you crash into a cheap one and not an expensive one. Yeah, you can hit a U-Gold, but not a Ferrari. No, you don't crash into any vehicles. Okay. And also, Bubba J, you can't fly over personal property. What does that mean? You can't fly over somebody's house without their permission. Oh, so I gotta knock on the door and ask them okay if I spy on them in their pool. Also, you need to stay clear of real aircraft, because it's dangerous. That's right, you could cause a big accident.
The FAA is trying to get a handle on drones as toys, and last month it announced a new registration process that owners need to follow. We're joined now by Greg McNeil, professor of law and public policy at Pepperdine University, who specializes in issues surrounding flying robots. He also is on the FAA Advisory Rule Committee for Drone Registration, and he's the co-founder of AirMap, a drone software startup. Hi, Greg.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Delighted to have you here. So let's start with this. What are the proposed guidelines from the FAA, and how will they affect an amateur drone pilot?
Sure. So the Secretary of Transportation at the end of October issued an order that said that all unmanned aircraft under 55 pounds need to be registered with the federal government, which set in motion a task force of industry representatives and others from various groups. I was on the task force where we sat for 3 days locked in FAA headquarters trying to hash out exactly what a registration system would look like. It was pretty fascinating because that's a very rapid timeline. It was only about a week and a half after the order was issued that we got together, and the secretary is hoping to have all this stuff wrapped up before Christmas. The task force recommendations for the process can be summarized in really three simple steps. First, fill out an electronic registration form on the web or through an app. Second, you'll immediately receive an electronic certificate of registration, and you'll also get a personal registration number. And then the third step, take that registration number and put it on all of your drones. That's the entire accountability system, subject to some additional details.
Is it your sense that the FAA was nervous about the number of drones being given as Christmas presents?
I think so. I mean, I think more so than the FAA, it was the Secretary of Transportation and a need to somehow make sure that those individuals operating them understood that they were operating something that was more than a toy, that it was something that was in the national airspace system where other aircraft are operating.
And the FAA also has a one-sheet iFlySafe list of guidelines, which, among other things, recommends flying below 400 feet, not within 5 miles of an airport. And it says not to pilot a drone while drunk. Are recreational drones actually dangerous?
I don't believe they're dangerous, although any device can be dangerous when operated in an unsafe way. And so, you know, one of the things that the task force had to look at was which devices should be registered. And what you start to realize is that even something as small as 2 or 3 pounds, when it gets up in the air at 400 feet, becomes rather deadly. And in many ways, these devices are safer than aircraft. They're replacing helicopters flying between buildings by having drones fly between buildings to get the same type of footage that CNN or an artist or a movie maker might want to get. And so it really comes down to how the device is being used.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Greg McNeil. It was a pleasure to talk with you.
Thanks so much for having me.
This New Yorker podcast is supported by Audible, a great source for audiobooks, including titles from many New Yorker contributors, like The Sixth Extinction, An Unnatural History by Elizabeth Colbert, The Secret History of Wonder Woman by Jill Lepore, and Being Wrong by Catherine Schultz. Explore an incredible variety of listening options with a 30-day trial, and your first digital audiobook is free. Visit audible.com/New Yorker podcast. This New Yorker podcast is supported by Squarespace. From the unusual to the extraordinary, your website stands out when you build it with Squarespace. Their designer templates let you easily create a unique and beautiful website that looks perfect on any device. Get a free trial and see why some of the world's most influential people, brands, and businesses choose Squarespace at squarespace.com/radiohour.
I'm here with our friend Nick Palmgarten. He wrote a piece for the New Yorker magazine a couple of years ago called "Here's Looking at You: Should We Worry About the Rise of the Drones?" Nick, how are you?
I'm well. Thanks, Nick.
So as you think about the skies above over Christmas and after Christmas, does it make you feel good to think about millions of Americans opening drones and sending them out in the air?
I can hear it now, the sound of sort of collisions, cartoon collisions all over town. The other thing I can imagine is by New Year's, thousands and thousands of drones stranded in trees. You know, like the way New York or cities have sneakers hanging from trees. Mm-hmm. These are going to be the new sneakers.
But I think one of the things that's so interesting about the subject is that there's so much utility. There's so many things drones could do, but the whole prospect is a little eerie for a lot of people.
Well, you know, I have to allow for the fact that drones are pretty awesome. They are cool. Drones can do so many wonderful things. They're great for, you know, inspecting pipelines, great for farm use, mm-hmm. great for, you know, traffic accidents and traffic jams, great for wildlife monitoring. And now we hear it's great for, you know, delivering burritos or sneakers or whatever. That's all well and good. But I have misgivings about any machines that could one day have some kind of intelligence, especially mm-hmm. if these machines are in the air. You know, they're basically, we're talking about flying robots. Mm-hmm. That gives me some pause.
So one of the things that I've always found disquieting about drones, and one of the things that I think has framed the conversation about drones, is, of course, the way that we've thought about drones for the last 10 years. So, you know, when I think about the drones coming in the air after Christmas, it's hard to disentangle it from the drones flying over Pakistan and the way we've thought about drones for the last 15 years. They've been these weapons of war, and you see drone footage, and you're almost expecting an explosion to come on it.
Well, that's true. I mean, this is initially really it's a military technology, and the drone boom was a result of our being at war. You know, in a way, the sort of drone boom back home is a swords into plowshares thing. It's sort of the flying robot soldiers are looking for jobs. They're coming home. They're looking for something to do. They're looking for a market. And to some extent, you know, the commercial applications, the way the companies making these drones have pushed the commercial applications, is an example of them trying to make a market for themselves. So we do think of even these great little quadcopters that people are getting for Christmas, there's sort of an element of death from above, you know, still attached to that wrapping paper.
Right.
And so, you know, when I think of these things being everywhere, there's something, you know, the air will be slightly tinged with some kind of futuristic menace.
Earlier this year, the Department of Homeland Security hosted a summit on the dangers of consumer drones being used for terrorism. Should we be worried about that possibility?
I suppose it's inevitable that an act of terrorism will be committed using a drone. But I think the bigger worry that we have is that an act of terrorism itself is inevitable, regardless of whether it's a drone or an airplane or a train or a box cutter.
But the thing about a drone is that, unlike a box cutter, you don't have to have a man carrying it. They're separate from the individual. So doesn't it open up all kinds of possibilities? Like, the same reason they're so useful for us in our war in Pakistan could conceivably be useful for a terrorist in wherever.
I don't think we should be worried about drones as terrorist tools. I mean, frankly, you know, putting on my tinfoil hat here, you know, I'm more afraid of drones in the hands of the authorities.
Well, that ties into some news that's happened recently. In Oklahoma City, there's a guy who's very anti-prostitution. And so he follows prostitutes. And recently, or I guess it was this summer, followed a prostitute in the John and followed them with a drone. And then the drone flew to sort of a secluded area where the man had parked and flew up to the windshield and filmed them in action. And he took that video and gave it to the police. And now both of them are being prosecuted. What do you think of that?
The drone vigilante. I don't feel too good about it. I just don't like the idea of people running around videotaping other people doing things, even if it's against the law.
But it's also surveillance of people inside a truck in a secluded area where presumably they thought it was quite private.
Right. I mean, if that were someone having an affair, or if it were someone's, you know, enemy that was, you just don't, there's so many scenarios you can think of where that is not an innocent act of drone vigilantism.
So Amazon recently got a lot of attention. They played a video, came right out after Black Friday, and it showed a guy who ordered a soccer shoe or a pair of soccer shoes for his daughter, and they were delivered by drone, and Amazon made a big deal about it as though this is the near future. Now, of course, there are a bunch of technical problems before you can deliver soccer shoes. For example, the drones need to have a place to land. The drones need enough battery power. The drones need to be able to carry stuff. The drones need to be able to not crash into each other. Mm-hmm. How far away are we from a future where you get something delivered by drone, Nick?
I saw an article, I think it was called Dubious Drone, and I think they thought that that whole video may have been faked. It was one of those theories that because of the way that the sort of angles of the drone weren't right. Mm-hmm. It looked real to me, and it looked like fun.
I mean, one of the things that I am interested by with drones is the notion that they're going to make delivery faster, which is a little bit dispiriting because delivery is really good. Amazon has kind of already solved the problem of how to get you what you want really quickly. It's not clear to me that there's a pair of shoes that I really need a day sooner. Like, there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah.
But if that's the revolution's kind of boring.
Yeah, it's strange. I talked to this guy who likened the development of the drone to, like, gunpowder and the computer and all these sort of real game-changing things. But if it's really just, you know, getting a soccer cleat in half an hour as opposed to 24 hours, you know, I'm not sure that's a game changer.
Looking into the future, what do you think is the first time a drone will actually be useful in Nick Baumgarten's life?
I imagine myself stranded on the side of the road, you know, with a flat tire in some newfangled car I can't figure out. And I'm going to be cursing and kicking and feeling miserable and inadequate. And along will come some drone. And it'll just hover right in front of me in some really kind voice, say, "Excuse me, sir, can we help you?"
Or we'll film you, yeah, frustrated and feeling
exactly
inadequate, and put it on YouTube
exactly
automatically.
Well, maybe both can happen. We can coexist, shame and help.
All right, thank you, Nick Baumgarten. It was a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you, Nick.
That was NewYorker.com editor Nicholas Thompson talking to New Yorker staff writer Nicholas Baumgarten.